Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm thrilled to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned. Edwina Van Gaal will be joining me on my show as my guest. She is the founder of Perfect Earth Project, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization that is teaching landowners how to keep their lawns and gardens and golf courses all organic, how to treat them sustainably. And she's going to be on in a little while to tell us more about that. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the city, some events going on, some things in the news, all good. First, of course, I am so excited to be welcoming in spring. This is the perfect time, actually, to have Edwina on as we're all looking to make our lawns more beautiful. I was out in the garden for hours yesterday and the day before, just clearing the plots and getting them ready for planting. I'm a little behind. I have my sugar snap peas and snow peas ready to go in, but they are not in yet, so that's what I will be doing later on this afternoon. And just getting all the gardens ready and looking beautiful. But my bulbs are all up and are spreading color throughout the property, and it's just so nice to welcome in this time of year. It just makes me happy just looking outside. So I hope all of you are sharing in that happiness as we welcome in spring. Great things going on in the city and around. Tonight is a great event at St. John the Divine. I've been talking about it for a while. It's the end of an exhibit that's been on for the past month called The Value of Food, Sustaining a Green Planet. And that's at St. John the Divine. That exhibit was talking about food security, accessibility, and sustainability. And this evening, which is an evening of witness, it will be curated by Anna Lappe from the Small Planet Institute, and it's a discussion night. They should have some great speakers there about sustainability and our green planet. So that goes perfectly with our theme, but you should check it out. Also tonight, another wonderful opportunity is a documentary screening of a film called The True Cost, and this is about the story of clothing and the people who make it, wear it, and the impact that that industry is having on our world. It includes a vegan buffet and discussion following the film, and it's at the Sustainability Institute at Molloy College. Suggested donations $5. April 2nd is a spring soiree fundraiser for the Hawthorne Valley Place-Based Learning Center and the Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School. That's up in Hudson Valley. Also, Taste That Jazz is going on April 4th at Eisenhower Park. It's a wonderful evening of New Orleans food and jazz music. So check that out. There's a GMO labeling rally at Senator Vendito's office in Massapequa on April 6th, and that's a rally to get him to support the bill to have mandatory genetically modified labeling. Very important. We've been talking about this for a long time. As a matter of fact, they have just approved two new strains of GMO corn that the USDA is not regulating, and they have given permission to farmers to start planting this new corn. One is by Monsanto and one is Syngenta. And this corn has not been really tested, or it will not be regulated. You will not know that you are eating it. But it is equipped with DNA to prevent the superweeds. We've all heard about the superweeds that no longer respond to the Roundup corn because they have mutated and have become immune to it. So now they've had to make the GMO corn even stronger with the pesticides embedded into its DNA. So now you can have Monsanto or Syngenta's superweed GMO corn. Yum. Anyway, also I wrote about the new GMO apples that are out there that when you cut, they don't turn brown like magic. We need to know what's in our food. They are playing with our food, and they are not telling us. And it takes a lot of energy to do all this research, and most people don't have the time for it. We need to be able to look at labels and know what we're eating. It is a right that we all have, and we need to stop being complacent. We need to all sign every petition that comes across our inbox, write letters to your senators and congressmen. We need to make this happen. Even though the bill in Washington did not pass, what we were calling the Dark Act, it is still coming back for another round. It's going to keep coming back for another round until we get our congressmen and senators to know what we want, and they need to hear the voice of the people. It's just ridiculous how much our government is working to support big business and not listen to the people. They have the money, we don't, but we have the voices. So we need to put our voices together and put our power together and get GMO labeling happening. I'd love to even see it being outlawed, but let's do one step at a time. So please sign any GMO petitions that come across your desk or email. April 8th and 9th is the Food and Enterprise Summit going on in Brooklyn. This is a collaboration and coming together of entrepreneurs and investors who want to finance a better local food system. Should be really interesting. You can see the schedule up online if you go to Food and Enterprise Summit and register just for the panels that interest you. So that should be really great. There's also a Chefs Collaborative Summit where you can do the same thing. Go online to the Chefs Collaborative Summit and buy tickets to the events that inspire you. April 11th, SunWorks is having their 8th annual greenhouse project. SunWorks is a nonprofit organization that brings environmental science and sustainability education into New York City public schools. Great organization, worth supporting. And it should be a fun evening as well. There's so many things going on. What I really recommend you doing is going to my website at ieatgreen.com and checking out the events. I am working with a group of people trying to start up the Long Island Food Coalition, excuse me, which would be an organization that would involve all the different game changers and people and organizations on Long Island working to make our food system better and our environment cleaner. And while we do this and get this up and running, the hope was to create a huge website that would have all of the events and schedules going on in the area. But until that happens, right now I am trying to fill that gap or that void by really looking into the different organizations that are around and putting their events up on my website. So I don't only have my events and Slow Food North Shore's events, but I have so many different organizations' events on my website so that you can go to one place and know that you can see what's going on in the city. So if you have an event and you don't see it on my website, please send it to me and I will be happy to add it. Okay, what else is going on? On my website, I have a couple petitions I'd like to bring your attention to. One is to tell the EPA not to allow radiation in our drinking water. And as we all have heard, there's also lead problems in our drinking water, especially in schools across the country. I remember when my kids were in school and I brought this up, and this is going back quite a ways, the school didn't want to spend the money on testing. I mean, and they probably knew deep down under that there was going to be a problem, and they didn't want to open a Pandora's box and have to deal with the financial responsibility of cleaning it up. So everyone should ask their schools to test their drinking fountains for lead in the pipes. But this actual petition on my website is about radiation in the drinking water. And you should just read it. It has to do with Fukushima, disasters like Fukushima that are going on even in this country, that were little leaks that we don't even know about, and it's getting into our water. And we need to sign a petition about that. Also a ban on insecticides that are killing our bees. And then there's that petition I was mentioning about the genetically modified apple. So if you could go on and sign those petitions, that would really be great. Also, Okay, I talked to you about the two different corn strains that are being planted. There was also a great article in the New York Times about recycling. And in the Silicon Valley, there is a great for-profit recycling center that it's called Recology, and it's in San Francisco, and they're recycling everything and making a business out of it. And it's really forward-thinking, and it's become a real tour opportunity for government officials from around the world coming to see how well they're recycling everything. And it's really interesting because I know recycling here on Long Island in my town, you know, I separate everything and then I watch the garbage men just throw it all into one garbage truck, and I've called many times about it, really outraged that they're doing this, and they say they've separated at their plant and they've invited me down, and I have yet to go, and I think I'm going to go because they also say that they have conveyor belts where they separate out everything, and it seems ridiculous to me that they'd go and squish a glass bottle and then have to separate the parts out, but that is what they're doing. And it's just, you know, amazing. It's a great business model, and we all, you know, going forward could think of more ways of recycling and reusing things to keep it out of the landfill. That's one thing that I talk about a lot, is there is no throwing anything away. Everything goes somewhere. And if it's not being reused and recycled, it's going into a landfill, and we just don't have enough land, or nor do we want all that garbage just piling up. So we need to all think about reusing things. And, of course, it's sad because manufacturers today make things really cheaply so they break. You're very, very often better off getting a blender from the 1950s than you are getting a blender today, because a blender today might only last a year, and one from my grandmother is still going strong. So, you know, it's just something to think about. We need to fix things and not just be so quick to throw them out. Okay, I want to share with you all a recipe. This week I am sharing with you a marinated tofu recipe with an Indian saag. And this recipe is similar to saag paneer. I'm sure many of you have had that. But instead of the paneer is cheese, and instead I use tofu. And I played with this recipe quite a bit, and I'm really working on perfecting it as I try to get my recipes together for my cookbook that I'm working on. So this time I marinated the tofu first before cooking it up, and it really gave it a really nice flavor. I marinated it overnight in some of the herbs and spices. So this is it. I used a 20-ounce block of wildwood sprouted organic tofu. Whenever I can get sprouted tofu, I do. I just think it's that much healthier, but also this is super firm, so it's really, it's very firm and doesn't have as high a water content. So I cut it into 1-inch cubes. I still try to press it and remove some of the excess water before marinating it. For the marinade, you need 1 can of organic coconut milk, 1 teaspoon of cardamom, 2 teaspoons of cumin, 2 teaspoons of turmeric, and 1 teaspoon of salt. I'm just going to mix that together and put the tofu in that and let it sit for a minimum of 2 hours, but I did it overnight, and that was really great. So it takes a minute to put it all together. If you can think about it the day before and just marinate that, it will be that much better. Then you need some sunflower oil for frying that the next day. For the stir-fry part of the Indian saag, 3 tablespoons of coconut oil, 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1 teaspoon turmeric, 2-inch piece of fresh ginger root that you're going to mince, 2 teaspoons of minced garlic, 2 teaspoons of coriander, 2 teaspoons of cumin, 2 onions finely diced, 1/2 teaspoon red pepper flakes, and that's optional. I've been cooking my Indian food without the heat part of the spice and leaving that out so that people can add that on their own. That's the difference, you know, if you were to buy a curry blend, that's already going to have the spice in it, the heat spice. So mixing up your own curry blend, which is what I'm doing when I mix the coriander, the cumin, the turmeric, and the salt together, I'm just leaving out the heat part. So, because a lot of people say they don't like Indian food because it's too spicy. So this gives you the option to play with it. I use 2 bags of frozen organic chopped spinach. Each bag was 1 pound. one teaspoon of garam masala that you add at the end. Garam masala is the herbs of the spices that are more aromatic, like cloves, cinnamon, that kind of thing. And then also another 3/4 cup of coconut milk. And so, like I said, you first make the marinade, put that all together, and let the marinade sit. When you get to the stir-fry part, you're going to heat the coconut oil in a wok, add the onions, the ginger, and the garlic. And while that's sautéing, you can pulse the chopped spinach in the food processor to make it really finely chopped or almost pureed. Then add the rest of the spices to the wok in with the oil, the onions, the garlic, and the ginger, and let those cook for 5 minutes, and that just helps bring out the flavors of the spices. If the onions and the garlic start sticking to the pan, you can add just a couple tablespoons of water to the wok to just help that deglaze. And you're going to mix that up in a separate pan. I used a heavy cast iron frying pan. I fried up the tofu, so I removed the tofu cubes from the marinade and fried that in the safflower oil. And you can either saute it where you're sauteing it in a little bit of oil, and that would require you then to turn each cube of tofu so that all the sides get golden brown. Or you can actually fry it where you put in a full inch of oil, and then you drop the cubes in and just fries, you know, all over the tofu cube at once. And then, you know, I've actually done testing where we actually put oil into the frying pan, fried something up, and then removed the oil to see how much oil we lost. And believe it or not, if the oil is the right temperature, it sears the outside and creates a crust quickly so it's not absorbing extra oil. Anyway, so I fried it all, and it worked really great. And I drained it on a paper towel, which, again, absorbs some more of the oil. Back to the wok. So in with those spices, I then add the pureed spinach to the wok, and I add the coconut milk and let that cook for about 5 minutes. Then I add the fried tofu to that spinach mixture and allowed the whole thing to come together and allowed all the spices to mix together in the wok. I served it with some saffron rice. And it was delicious. So try making it. Believe it or not, if you marinate the tofu ahead of time, this whole dish can come together in 15 minutes. So you can get dinner on the table really quick. So it's a great midweek dish, or if you're pairing it with other Indian dishes, you can, you know, it can just be a part of another full meal. So enjoy it. As always, I love hearing feedback. So please share with me, your experience in making it, and let me know how you liked it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, Edwina Van Gaal. She is the founder of Perfect Earth Project, and Edwina's been designing landscapes since 1984, and her interest in plants, art, and architecture led to collaborations with many notable architects and artists in her years. And she actually was inspired when she was brought down to Panama in 2008 to design a park with Frank Gehry for the Bio Museo. And there she co-founded the Azuerto Earth Project, which was her inspiration to starting the Perfect Earth Project here on Long Island. So, Edwina, are you with me?
I'm here.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for joining
me. Thank you. Oh, great to be with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. So before we really dive into what you're doing, can you just kind of give my listeners a little background on you and your inspiration and Perfect Earth Project?
Sure. I have been a gardener first and foremost all my life, and designing gardens for all of my clients. I never used chemicals in my own garden, and didn't really deal with it, though, in my clients' gardens, sort of what they did. They started asking me to do vegetable gardens. It was assumed, of course, that their vegetable gardens would be maintained without chemicals. But we didn't address what was happening on the rest of their property until one day my dentist asked me what to do, because he lived on the water and he didn't feel good about the amount of chemical he was putting on his lawn, because he'd been reading about how bad it was for the water quality. And who could he turn to for advice? And I realized there wasn't anybody. And so I had to do it myself. And so we started the Perfect Earth Project in 2013. So we're still a very young organization. Our goal is to make people aware of how dangerous lawn and landscape chemicals are, particularly to you directly, that children playing on the lawn, pets playing on the lawn, are absorbing chemicals that are every day we find out how dreadfully toxic they are. Like everything else in the that all the chemicals that are being used agriculturally and industrially, the burden of proof for safety lies on the chemical company themselves. So the incentive to really prove their danger is not there. Also, these are what we call chronic, not acute poisons. So they take years to develop in your body. It's not as if you're going to get sick immediately, although pets do often show the damage from instant contact because they're licking their paws, mm-hmm. and they tend to get more into it. So we felt that if people were aware of how dangerous these chemicals are, and we taught them how to work without them, because the idea that you can only have a nice lawn with chemicals is not true. It's just a habit we've developed and a dependency we've developed. Healthy bodies don't need drugs, and neither do healthy landscapes.
Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense. And yet, like you said, so many people are just, you know, they don't even think about it, and they're so used to not having a dandelion anywhere in sight on their lawn that they just allow the landscapers to do whatever they do, and they don't ask any questions, and they just let the status quo happen. So you're shaking things up a little bit, and it's wonderful to get people to think about this because they really need to. Especially we have the aquifers here, so, you know, all those chemicals, you know, can get down into the aquifers.
Yes, and into our recreational waters as well, where we're beginning to see a great deal of impact on shellfish in particular, but all the big fish die-off in Riverhead last year is attributable to lawn chemicals.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. That makes sense,
yeah,
too.
It's a good part of it. It's very difficult to measure. People are naturally focusing on septic systems, which also contribute considerably. But lawn management is something we can do right now. The septic is going to take a while. Lawn management is something everybody can do. It's free. It's in your own yard. And it's interesting, too.
Uh-huh. Now, what was the Azuero Earth Project that you did down in Panama?
Well, it was somewhat related in that the people in Panama where I was working on a reforestation program, the land is seriously depleted. They're basically small farmers. Everyone has some beef cattle. Many have dairy. And the land has become seriously depleted. They use a lot of chemicals. And now their land is just worn out from overgrazing, overuse, and the climate is working against them because it's getting hotter and drier, and their soil is gone and poisoned. And so no one had ever really done a reforestation and what's called silvopastoral, which is mixing cows with trees. So the idea was to bring back the native species and run your cows under the trees. And no one had done this without chemicals. So that was our focus, is to bring the scientific community together with local farmers to test the effectiveness. It's a very long, slow project. So that is, and it's very specific in a way to the tropics and to that place.
Mm-hmm. Has any research been done yet? I'm sure it has. Being successful, would you say?
Yes. We're really focusing a lot on education because it's hard to get people to change behavior that they and their parents and grandparents have always done it a certain way. And it's really never appropriate to come into an area and think that you know better.
Of course.
Because you don't often.
Right.
And so we've learned a lot, as well as we're hoping that the local people there are learning a lot as well. So it's not an overnight thing. Besides the life of a tree, you know, the transition process is long. We've only been doing it since 2008. And so it's going to be a while, but the changes in attitude are already becoming very apparent.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, you can see how slow everything is. I mean, the food movement here and the environmental movement, I mean, it's been going, Earth Day is, you know, so many years old, 40 years, I think. But, you know, it's still, education is really, like you said, what it's about. We're still trying to educate people about eating healthy, and we're trying to educate them about the environment and using lawn chemicals. And, you know, some of us have been at it for many, many years, and people are first kind of starting to wake up to it, you know, as they see
it's
the ramifications
right
of
now.
Climate change. I'm sorry, what's that?
It's an amazing time right now. I mean, yes, we started 40 years ago, but it's starting to really catch on. The food movement has led the way for the toxicity awareness campaign that we are doing. We probably couldn't do what we are doing if we hadn't been preceded by food awareness.
Mm-hmm. Right. So tell me how the response has been. Have you been, I would imagine, especially out in the Hampton area, that people are really welcoming you. Is that the reaction you're getting mostly?
Oh, yeah, and we're really a nationwide campaign, but the east end of Long Island, because it's where our offices are and it's where I live, there are our pilot community, and it's going so fast we can't really keep up. The town of East Hampton has pledged to become our first perfect town, so now we have to figure out, okay, how do we make that happen? They have already abandoned the use of pesticides and fertilizers and chemical
everywhere?
Fertilizers on all their public properties, the properties
wow.
that they manage as a town. Yes. And now we're working with them to get better results because they just stopped using the chemicals, but they didn't alter their management practices. And so we'd like them to exemplify how great your landscape can look without, because a lot of people just say, oh, yeah, I don't use chemicals. My lawn is a mess. And we say, well, that's not really our poster child.
Right.
We want your lawn to look great. And it can. And so, like, our first message for people in the spring now is this is not the time to fertilize. Boosting your lawn with artificial sort of nutrient at this point forces it into an soft growth, which makes it very susceptible to fungus diseases. You really want the lawn to force its roots down, looking, so it's a little tough love, I guess you could say. If you have an irrigation system, fine to open it, to have the guys open the system. Don't turn it on. Do not have your irrigation company set your clock. They are your water delivery engineers. They are not your lawn specialists. The people, you or whoever is in charge of the ultimate look of your lawn or your landscape, they're the ones who should decide the watering, because to set your clock now when your lawn doesn't need water and to use the same settings through the heat of the summer is not only a waste of water, but it's really bad for developing great root systems. And they are just like a healthy body. That's where it all begins.
Right. I love driving around my area and seeing, you know, people's sprinklers going while it's raining. You know, it's just on automatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you obviously don't need it if it's raining, and yet nobody's stopping to think, turn it off. So.
Right. And you also don't need it until the weather gets hot. So I'm hoping that people have that same response to seeing irrigation systems on in the early spring.
Mm-hmm. And when you say don't fertilize, would that include putting down lime? Because I know, you know, sometimes people put down lime in the fall and the spring.
Fall is really better. Sometimes people lime without having tested. You don't always need it. So it's a really good idea to do a soil test They're very inexpensive. You send them to Cornell, and then you can contact the Perfect Earth Project, and we'll help you read it, because, frankly, I still can't figure out a soil test. But we have people who are really good at it, and they can help you. But even the cooperative extension can help you read your soil test. But it doesn't make sense to put the money into lime or fertilizers that you don't need. So the first thing really is to test your soil.
And then when would you put down lime if you were going to do it? Like, do people still have time to first test their soil now and get the results back and put down the lime?
Yes. Yeah, you can put down lime pretty much any time. But it's in most cases, it's really not necessary. We believe in using compost and compost tea so that by building the health of your soil. Lime does become necessary if you have a lot of oak trees, and we recommend mulch mowing your leaves in the fall and leaving them in place and leaving your grass clippings in place, so that restores the nutrient that you don't have to buy fertilizer if you're using what nature is already dropping on the ground. And so, but if you have a lot of oak trees, chances are those leaves will acidify your soil over time. So that is a time then you want to neutralize that acidity.
Mm-hmm. And the compost tea, would you put that down in the spring too, or is that like fertilizing where that would encourage shallow or weak roots?
It encourages mycorrhizal and bacterial activity in your soil. So you can do it anytime. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't run off into the water. It doesn't provide nutrient in ways that aren't healthy for the environment. It just stimulates the activity in the soil that allows the roots to uptake the nutrients they need. So, it's really fine anytime. But once again, it's good to talk to someone who is really knowledgeable about soil, or have your soil tested. Or read up on it on our website. In the fall is when we recommend putting a layer of compost down, but compost tea gives you the same result without buying yards and yards and yards of compost. It's hard to find really good compost. It's in big demand, and really well-made compost is not easy to find or to make, unless you make your own.
Right. I actually, let's take a couple of minute break, and when we come back, maybe we can go through some of the processes that people can go through to really help make their lawns look good for this season, and we can talk a little bit more also about what Perfect Earth is doing and how you are spreading the word and getting it across the country. Okay?
Sure.
So don't go anywhere, everyone. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network with my guest, Edwana Von Gaal. Be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
The story behind the story, your story, my story. It's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Peter Roth, host of Energy Stew on Friday mornings at 11:30. Tune in this week to hear how we are saving Indian Point Nuclear Plant. You know it sits on an earthquake fault, and a large tremor could send out radioactive plumes. My guest, Gail Rex, has been using earth acupuncture up there to calm the land and has written an important book about earth acupuncture. So So tune in this Friday morning at 11:30 to learn how this works.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. This coming week on Connect the Dots, you'll be able to hear me talk with Jen Senko, director of the new documentary, The Brainwashing of My Dad, a film about the takeover of our minds by conservative media. Don't forget to tune in Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest, Edwina Van Gaal from the Perfect Earth Project, is with me talking about how we can transition from a chemical lawn to a beautiful organic lawn. Edwina, are you with me?
I'm here.
Great. So what would you say are the first steps people should do? Like you were saying, in East Hampton, they just stopped using the chemicals but didn't change anything to make it better. What if people want to stop using those chemicals, what are the first things that they should do this spring?
Well, the key elements to a healthy lawn is, of course, the key element is healthy soil. The way you get that is proper watering and proper mowing are the two easiest, most immediate things you can do. So you do not water until the soil is dry, about 6 inches down. And then when you water a lot. Most people water frequently and shallow. So they say, oh, I put my system for 10 minutes every day or 20 minutes every other day. That is not the way to do it, because what you're getting is a lot of water on the surface. So your roots stay up close to the surface. So when there is a sunny day, they dry out quickly because it's all on the surface. And it doesn't promote resiliency. Plus a longer blade, so you mow higher, 3.5 to 4 inches, so you have a bigger photosynthetic surface, more food for those roots. Also longer leaf blades crowd out and shade out weeds. Most of the time, if you have a crabgrass or a dandelion problem, it's because there are bare patches in your lawn, and the dandelions and crabgrass have a place. They need a lot of sun to germinate. So do not cut your lawn short in the spring. You're just opening up wonderful spots for crabgrass and dandelions. It's, keep it long. Cut it short in the fall and get lots of grass seed down, because that's the cool season when grass seed germinates well. Weed seeds germinate in warm season in the spring. So that's why we say do all your fertilizing, all of your really intensive raking and getting ready. Do all that in the fall. The other thing, including your feeding, it's an aerating. Aerating is really great for areas that are compacted. Dandelions are often an indicator of compaction. They actually do a great thing. Sending down that root punches through compacted soil. We know people have been trained through the years to not like dandelions, so we are willing to accept that and say, okay, if you get a few dandelions, pull them out by hand. It's actually cheaper and faster than using the toxins. The dandelion poison is something called 2,4-D that's in a weed and seed package. It's one of the most toxic chemicals you can actually legally buy. It's really dangerous. It comes into your house on your shoes, on your pets, on your kids. It gets into the wash. It will last in your rug for about 2 years.
Wow.
It's bad. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. bad. So what to do is basically really monitor your watering. We suggest that a healthy lawn probably can be watered once or twice a week for a really good long time, like 45 minutes. But it's a good idea to test. We offer a water meter on our site. They're a little bit on the pricey side. They're close to $100, but you'll have fun with it for years. Kids love it because you go around the lawn and you poke and you see if you if your watering was deep enough or if the lawn is dry enough to start watering again. It'll make a huge difference in the way your lawn responds. Do not start watering, as I said, in the spring. Get those roots down and strong so that you can water less. If you're watering now, you're not developing roots. Those roots are just wimpy babies on the surface, and they will not be able to withstand a summer with that more measured natural watering regime.
Uh-huh. That watering principle even applies to a vegetable garden. You're much better off watering less often and watering well than, like you said, watering every day just a little bit, because then it's just the surface is getting it.
Because I'm sure you know, then you're going to get fungus on your tomatoes just like that when you're watering all the time.
Right, and you want those deep roots.
Yeah, the same thing goes for grass. If it's got water coming on it and that high humidity all the time, it's just the perfect climate for fungus problems. And so it's very, and it also washes all the nutrient out of the soil because it just keeps washing it away. So your soil gets really depleted.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard one of the worst places that uses the most chemicals are golf courses. Are you going after golf courses and trying to raise their awareness? Because that seems huge.
It is huge, and it's a difficult challenge. We would love to offer people toxin-free golf courses across the United States, and yet we think it will happen. We are working to help golf courses understand, but mostly we're working on golfers. The change will come from the golfers themselves. Right now, golfers put a huge amount of pressure on their groundskeepers to provide them with a kind of golf course that really is not sustainable without chemicals. Grass does not really thrive when it's cut the way they cut a cutting green. So part of the golf revolution will probably have to mean going back to the kinds of golf courses that are called links courses that were popular and still are in Scotland, and the origin of golf, because the cost, it's the one place where the cost of maintaining the turf without chemicals is higher. In other cases, on everybody's lawn, it's not higher, because think of it. You're not buying chemicals. You're replacing chemicals with your attention. You're paying attention. It's just like raising kids. You can pay other people to raise your kids. You can put them in a school or something, but it's not the same as being a good parent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's about parenting your landscape, and it's a wonderful opportunity for raising the awareness within your family and your neighborhood and your community, because we ask people, if you have already gone toxin-free, the next thing, the next major step you can take is just ask your neighbors, is your lawn safe for my children? You can ask this, your school. You can ask your dog run everywhere you go. Is that lawn safe? Is that safe for me and my family? That sends a really amazingly strong message.
Mm-hmm. Now, wasn't there a law passed that prevents schools from using toxic chemicals on their lawns now, or no?
Yes, there was. Many of the schools are not even aware of it. There are no penalties for noncompliance, and there was no educational component, so that the landscapers simply, or the groundskeeper simply, said to the schools in most cases, well, we can't give you the lawn you're looking for, and so they simply don't. And so in many, many cases, they are noncompliant, and or the law allows for exceptions. So all you have to say is, well, we can't really do it. So then they say, fine, you don't have to.
Really?
So our job as Perfect Earth is to make the parents aware. It has to come from the parents. They have to insist. They have to insist. And then we need to make sure that the educational opportunity is as available as possible for the landscape industry.
Mm-hmm. So does Perfect Earth do that? Do you run educational seminars for both professionals and homeowners?
Yes, we do. We just had one in Riverhead a couple of weeks ago, but we won't be able to be in every town in the United States, so we also promote others who do so. So on Long Island this fall, Chip Osborne, who is a fabulous non-toxic educator, will be doing a two-day seminar. We will be announcing the location and the date on our website and through our newsletters. Also, NOFA, the New England Organic Farming Association, which gives a credit course. You can get actually accredited as a toxin-free organic landscaper. Their course is more comprehensive. It's 4 days, and they will be doing that in Riverhead this fall. And these are as a result of us raising the need, the demand. So that's really very gratifying for us to see that objective that we have, the goal we've set for ourselves, is being met.
Mm-hmm. And is there accreditation that landscapers can get so that people know if they're using a landscaper that has this education or not?
Yes, that's what NOFA does. And so you can go online to NOFA, and you can read about their courses and the accreditation that they give. And, yes, we have also a directory on our website so people can look in their zip code or their area for people who are either certified or simply proclaimed, I guess you'd say, as providing toxin-free landscapes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's great to you're a great organization for people to know about, because this is something that I have heard people in my area always asking about and thinking that there, you know, really wasn't an option. I know when I've looked for green lawn care, it's limited, you know, what you can find, especially also for taking care of trees, you know, and shrubbery, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Yes, it's comprehensive, and we spend probably more time than we should talking about lawns, but the lawns are the recipient of more chemicals. And the typical lawn, American lawn, uses 2 to 4 times more pesticides and fertilizers than the average acre of agricultural land, and golf courses are like 7 to 8 times more. So we feel that if we can really build a movement among people to abandon the use of these chemicals, we will be saving basically 255 million pounds of pesticides from entering our soil and our bodies every year.
That's huge. That's huge.
And for free.
And, you know, and what you were saying
about
your neighbors is also so important, because I know I took a course on soil nutrition, and you know they were talking about how in real time, you know, if somebody puts a chemical on your neighbor's lawn, it goes right underneath, you know, the whole fungi connection that happens underground, you know, instantly it's in my lawn too. So even though I have an organic garden, it's only as organic as it can be, being that I have neighbors that might use something.
Exactly. And now we have a huge challenge with the ticks, because there is no question that, you know, Lyme disease is bad and people are spraying for ticks. And we have looked at the tick sprays, even the organic sprays, they kill pollinators. They're non-selective. There's really, you know, the permethrin-based and the other truly toxic pesticides are such a bad idea. But even the organic ones, we sadly have to tell people we can't support. What we also feel that they bring a false sense of security, because people feel when they've sprayed their properties that they're safe. They are not.
Mm-hmm.
They
right.
only are effective for a few days. And you can't, it's too expensive, thankfully, to spray every few days. The most effective way to protect yourself is to protect yourself, and that is to put on repellents. And there are some wonderful natural repellents out there that really do work. And if you put them on when you apply, like, sunscreen on your child or any other of your beauty products, moisturizer in the morning, and then reapply perhaps in the afternoon, it's way more effective than spraying your property. And, of course, way more environmentally sound.
Right, but you definitely want to use non-toxic ones on yourself, especially if you're putting it on your skin.
Yes, yeah. You sure do. And there are those that work just fine.
Uh-huh.
I make
now,
my own
one thing that I know I've struggled with, and I think on your website you actually mentioned that they are can be good for lawns, are things like voles and grubs. What do you say about those? That they
well,
actually...
it's a little hard for me to love voles. And
yeah,
voles.
Really.
But in small, when an environment is in balance, ideally there will be predators to balance them out. And but if you it's always interesting as part of the conversation to recognize that they are kind of the ultimate decompaction agents that they and if you had grubs, the moles are eating them, you know, I mean the voles are. And so you know, moles are carnivores and voles are herbivores. And so but nevertheless they do a lot of damage and they do mess up your lungs. So one thing is that if the population gets out of control, then it is time to perhaps step in and look at how you could play the role of the predator and either discourage them or remove them from your property. But to think that you would never be able to create an ecosystem that is thriving and doesn't have a single agent of destruction on your property is really the mistake that we have always gotten into with our agriculture, like the super weeds and everything. It's that whack-a-mole thing, you know, literally moles here. You know, that when you try to remove one segment of a healthy environment entirely, the whole thing starts to crash.
Right, right. Yeah, interesting, because I know we had grubs, and I think that's why we had the, you're saying it wasn't voles, it was probably more like moles, if they're eating grubs?
Yeah, but actually the thing that eats the grubs the most is raccoons. They come in and dig up your lawn.
We've had that too.
Yeah. So, but there are some new things that are available for grub control. Generally, if you have really great root systems and a healthy nematode and population, your grub population will not get out of balance. A healthy lawn does not have grub problems. It has some grubs, but not to the extent that the damage is visible. Usually, it means that your root systems are not healthy. So it's really interesting always to kind of take a shovel, dig a little patch out of your lawn, and look at the roots of your grass. How deep are they? If you've got like an inch of roots, then that right there tells you a lot. You need better watering, better management practices.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it has gotten better because we did put down nematodes, and you know, over the years, I think we haven't had the raccoons digging up our lawn recently.
Yeah.
So, I think it has gotten better.
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit more about Perfect Earth Project and how you're expanding and getting the word out there.
Okay, well, we're doing things just like this, talking to you, so people can hear us, and we encourage everyone to come to our website, sign up for our newsletter. Starting any day now, we will have resume our weekly pep tips in which we give people ideas about and responses to things that are typical issues for this any time of the year that they are gardening. So we'll be talking about watering, we'll be talking about mowing. And then you can always go to our website to get more information. We're working with media outlets all across the nation. We'll have articles in major magazines, and we have been. And we are creating and promoting educational opportunities. So we're working with people like NOFA and ourselves. So we will be having a perfect day in Springs, where our office is this year, and each of these things will be used as a model. So from that and from our work with the town of East Hampton, we'll be creating videos and graphics packages that any community could come to our website, download, and use to create their own events. So we're doing something called the Lawn Therapist is In, and we're encouraging owners to come with their landscaper, because oftentimes we'll talk to one or the other, and of course they're saying they're having problem with the other side, to achieve the success. So we say, well, come together. Come and talk to us together, and let's work it out. So that's something we'd like to promote in communities everywhere and support those who wish to see this happen. So anyone who would like to create a perfect day, please contact us in your community, and we'll help you spread the word. We are creating graphic materials. We're working with our target audiences, which are veterinarians and the pet owners. The whole world of pet owners is very, very active and proactive.
So
we're working on Long Island with ARF, and they'll be handing out information to people who are adopting pets. We're working with mommy blogs and mothers' organizations, because we feel that mothers are perfectly poised to really look at the issues of what their children are being exposed to. So all sorts of things like that.
Well, that's all great stuff. Please send me a list of the events that you're having, and I will certainly help publicize them on my circles as well in my newsletter, because I know so many of my listeners are really, really passionate about everything you've been talking about, the work you're doing, the mission here is just great. And so I thank you so much. We really, really need an organization like yours here on Long Island and, as you said, across the country. So thank you, Edwina, for joining me and bringing your knowledge and expertise to our show.
Okay. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And everybody just go to perfectearthproject.org, sign up for our newsletter, and you'll have everything you need.
Wonderful. Thank you, Edwina. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week. Bye for now.